He said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
So what's cooking?
What's cooking? I just wanted to say Happy New Year to you, 2014.
No such thing as a New Year, dear.
Well, there is, but there isn't, but there is, but there isn't.
It's contrived. It's made up. I don't recognize it. I live in the now, not the past. Things are not now. So it's just a position in the universe that we're in the solar system. We're spinning around the sun. And who said that the new year starts January 1st, by the way? Why can't it be in the spring? Why can't it be another time of the year? Why can't it be on my birthday? I think that's a much better time to have a new year, my birthday.
You asked me what was cooking. I didn't ask you what was cooking.
Yeah, but then you carried off and you got off topic.
Okay. Anyway, what's cooking is water or a home-based stock to make soup or to make stews. Sarait. So I have seen so many recipes, and people put recipes on Facebook. Facebook is a really popular media, and I'm on Facebook every day, and there's a lot of recipes out there on Facebook. And I also Google a lot of recipes because I write for magazines. And a lot of them, I'd say 99% of them, use a canned or a boxed vegetable, beef, chicken, or fish stock, or a bouillon cube, not just water, or a bone or meat stock. And this is something that I use. I don't use the bouillon or the Maggi or the whatever these other ones that they use. I don't use those because they're really high in salt, monosodium glutamate, sugar, partially hydrogenated palm oil, cornstarch, caramel color, natural flavors, TBHQ as a preservative. And also, a lot of these products are made with equipment that process wheat, milk, egg, soy, fish, and shellfish. So there you have it. So you really don't know what you're getting. It's all in the name of flavor.
So it's this foreign substance, and you're saying it's not clean. It's not, not a good thing to add in.
No, just use water, herbs, and spices.
Yeah, but it can't be that simple, dear.
Oh, it's so simple, honey, it's stupid. Do you remember Ruby said that?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, the best thing is when you have leftover meat, such as the remaining on a poultry, turkey, chicken, is often used along with the bones of the bird or the joint. Fresh meat makes a superior stock, and cuts rich in connective tissue, such as the shin or the shoulder of the beef, are commonly recommended, either alone or with added portions of remains of the poultry to provide a really rich and fresh-tasting stock. And usually, the quantities recommended are one part of the fresh meat to two parts of water, which I always do. So the flavor, when you're using stock, comes from the cartilage and the connective tissue of the bones. And the connective tissue has collagen in it and is converted into gelatin that makes the liquid thick. So stock made from the bones needs to be simmered longer than stock made from the meat.
So it's not as convenient.
Exactly. So what I do is I will just go to the butcher and buy a big chunk of meat, and I'll just throw it in a pot filled with filtered water. And I might add fresh garlic, some onions, some carrots, maybe Mrs. Dash, no salt though, and then I just boil it, bring it to a simmer, you know, and let it boil for about 4 hours, depending on if it's the bone or the piece of meat, and then I've got a beautiful stock. But you can add herbs and spices, and it depends on, you know, the local traditions. And the classical cuisine, they use a bouquet garni, which is a bag of herbs. It's a fancy way to say a bag of herbs. And usually it consists of parsley, bay leaves, a sprig of thyme, and other herbs that are common. So, and then it's easy to take out. You know, you don't have to scoop it all out. You just take the bag out. So that's what the beauty of that bouquet garni is all about. So there you have that. So a chicken stock should be usually cooked for about 3 to 4 hours. Now, a fish stock, when you put the fish bones in, you want to use some finely chopped vegetables. And the fish stock only needs to be cooked for about 20 to 25 minutes. Because if you cook it any longer, it spoils the flavor.
So it depends on the animal that you're cooking.
Yeah, exactly. Ham, which is really used in Cajun cooking, should be cooked for a few hours. Lamb stock, when you have a big leg of lamb, when we have the bone left over, it says about 5 hours, which I normally do.
Right, and they're hard bones, so the harder the bone, I guess, the longer it takes to diffuse the elements, because that's what you're after, right? You want to get the elements.
Minerals, yeah.
You want to get the nutritional value from the bone. I mean, how many people eat bones?
Exactly.
So this is a good way to actually eat bones. I suppose if you pounded them down and before you put them in or break them up like you do, it's better, right?
Exactly, absolutely. So something that I find really, really interesting that I did not know before, and maybe you knew before, and maybe some of our listeners knew before, was called a master stock. So the characteristic of a master stock from other stocks is that after the initial use, I don't discard the stock or I don't turn it into a soup or a sauce. Instead, what I do, the broth is stored and reused as a future stock for more poachings. So with each use, the poached meats and other ingredients go into the same stock.
And now, when you said poaching, I automatically thought of animal poaching, whereas in this case, actually, the word poaching,
you're stealing
the nutrients. You're taking things from the bones. Maybe it sort of conveys the same meaning, right?
Okay, yeah. So let's just say over time, the flavor accumulates in the stock, making it richer and more complex with each poaching. And while subsequent poached meats absorb this flavor and likewise become more flavorful, in theory, a master stock should be contained indefinitely if due care and attention not to spoil. So they have said that some stocks in China could be up to 100 years old and passed down through generations. So what you do is you just reboil the same stock over and over again. So it says after use, if the master stock will not immediately be reused, it's usually boiled, skimmed, strained, and cooled quickly to kill any microorganisms in the stock. The growth of the microbes in the stock can be potentially spoil the flavor and pose health risks. The stock is then refrigerated or frozen until required. Refrigerated stocks may be kept up to 3 to 4 days, while frozen stocks can be kept up to a month. Now, if you keep the stock longer, let's say that it's 3 or 4 days you've had that stock in the fridge, then what you do is just reboil it, and then it can stay for another 3 or 4 days. Then you reboil it. Isn't that wild?
Well, I wonder what the purpose is other than the flavor. Is there some kind of medicinal value to handing down the stock?
Well, you just keep getting more. So that stock, what I do is I put a chicken stock in there, and I boil it and boil it and boil it. Then I put it in the fridge, and then I reboil another chicken. So you just keep getting the nutrients all.
So it's an additive effect. It starts building up
the
density of the particulate that you're after that gives it the flavor starts to build up.
Now, I've never done that because I usually make a soup or a stew.
Yes, and what a waste to buy a turkey, to even a chicken. This is so easy because I've seen you do it, and it wouldn't be difficult for a bachelor dude. Just when you eat the chicken, throw the bones in a pot, throw water in, and boil it, right?
Yeah.
And then you make a soup out of it and throw an extra meat or whatever you want.
Yeah. It's so easy. But here's a few basic rules that are kind of interesting. The stock ingredients are simmered starting with cold water. So you got your stock, you put cold water in it. The cold water promotes the extraction of the collagen, which could be sealed by hot water.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Okay, interesting stuff. Now, stocks are simmered gently with the bubbles just at breaking surfaces. You don't want a boil, like a roaring boil. If the stock is boiled, it could become cloudy. So that's interesting. We've heard that before, right?
Yes.
And don't add salt to the stock because it can become too salty. So you do your salting and seasoning after. And when you boil the meat, this has happened to me on many, many occasions, meat is added to the stock before the vegetables. And then there's a scum that rises to the surface, which you want to skim off before you add the other
ingredients. Yeah, let's get rid of the scum. We don't want
scum. You don't want scum. Now, this is important as well. If the cook wants to remove the fat, you don't want any fat in your stock. After the stock is finished, you cool it. Usually what I do is I make it a day ahead, and then I put it in the fridge, and then the fat floats on top, and it separates and solidifies into these globs. And then what you just do is you just remove it with a slotted spoon.
Right, because it's less dense than water,
yeah.
Which is why fat people float. They bob up and down like a cork.
Oh, there you go. That's why I sink.
That's why it's better to be fat, like really super obese if you're on the Titanic.
So it's up to 3 or 4 days you can keep it, unless you boil it again. And then you can keep it longer. So that's pretty cool. So I would so recommend just using filtered water, herbs and spices, your fresh garlic, your carrots and onions and any cilantro, any type of herb and spice you want to use. Just use water.
What about tap water versus, you know, the chlorine?
No, I would use filtered water, of course.
So use filtered water. Use clean water to begin with.
Yeah, use filtered water.
Don't they say that about the beer? You know, it's the water and a lot more, right?
Yes,
they do. The water, it makes a huge difference to brewing beer, like these microbreweries. They're really into high-quality water.
Right, well, absolutely, because it is in the water.
So that's your soup. It's like mainly water, isn't it?
Well, yeah, all my soups are water-based. Even the crock pot, when I make anything with the crock pot, I just use the filtered water and add my own herbs and spices.
And we used to catch crabs out in Crescent Beach, and we would cook them right on the dock. We'd bring a pot and a Bunsen lighter and boil them, and it was boiled in seawater. And I bet for those minerals from the crab and the seawater is what added up to the beauty of the deliciousness of that crab. Plus, it was super fresh, right?
Yeah. Wow. That sounds good.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, man.
That sounds really good. So, yeah, that's it. So, if you want to get into making soup, it is the easiest darn thing ever to make soup. I mean, you may think it's a difficult thing to do, but it's not. Just get a pot of water and away you go. Add your stuff in. You can even do vegetable soups. But don't bring it to a roaring boil. Bring it just to the boil where it just starts to bubble and then turn it down and then simmer it. You can simmer it all day long if you want. And then if you want to add some wild rice, you want to add some pot barley, whatever you want to add, beans, go for it, right?
Yes, and for example, the other night we had some beef barley soup, and I'm sure that you worked with a stock. You had some beef bones, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now that soup was so delicious, and we had a late night sort of soup dish. I don't know, it was like 10 or 11, and we absolutely slept like babies. Right through the night, nice stability of blood sugar. I just love that beef barley soup. It's a bone, muscle, brain builder, man.
I love the barley, man. That so satisfies me, and it agrees with me. And when you find foods that agree with you,
absolutely,
keep eating these foods because, you know, don't go off the beaten track because you get bored with it. Keep eating these foods. If you find that your health is good, you eliminate the food, you're not gassy, burping, acidic, eat these foods that make you feel good and continue to eat them. Your body loves the routine, consistency, right?
Yes. Well, when you study native indigenous diets, they're incredibly simple. They eat the same thing day in and day out.
Yeah.
Like a Fiji fisherman might eat a barracuda every day for decades, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have a huge variety, but the fish is so fresh right out of the sea. That's the other key, right?
But you feel good.
Yes.
And the older you get, you want to feel good. You really want your health. And so, you know, if you've got to eat the same thing all the time, go for it.
Yeah, so I'm thinking there's a bit of a work ethic here as opposed to just order in or drive through.
Or open up a can of soup.
Yes, and it's cleaner, it's fresher, you know what's in it. Plus, soups in themselves retain all the minerals, all the vitality of whatever you put in there. It stays in, it doesn't disappear.
Yeah, and then also, when you make a big pot, you might make about 12 bowls. You can freeze it.
Well, when you steam spinach, you lose a lot of nutrient value in the water that steams off, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the soup, it's all in there.
Yeah.
So when you drink the soup part, like sipping on the broth, that's actually like a medicine.
Mm-hmm. So what I do is, like, with that steamed, any type of steaming, I use filtered water, and then I would save the water from the steamed vegetables and use it in the soup as well, or drink it, put it on the side and drink it. There's a million things that you can get really creative, you know, especially when you're buying really healthy ingredients and they're expensive. Organic, really fresh food is expensive. So you want to use every morsel of that food and not be wasteful. And you know that's the way I am, right? I'm pretty thrifty that way. I use all the food that we have.
Yeah, well, I think that's why people have done this through the ages.
Oh, yeah.
There was less food, less waste, and you really appreciated what you had. I mean, when you're close to starvation or when you're living day by day and there's no technology, no stores, like people living in the bush and all that,
yeah.
Soups is one of the best survival foods.
Well, especially in the wintertime. And we've got snow up here, and it's cold, and you want to have that nice warming soup because it warms you from the inside out. Now, in the summertime, then you've got your cold soups, chilled soups, lighter soups. So that's another story. We'll talk about that in the summertime. But anyway, there you go. Start making your own soup. Don't use that canned and box stuff anymore, or the little cubes. Don't use those. Get rid of those. Get those out of your diet. No more.
Okay, good advice. Let's move on now. Who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Dr. Karen Becker. Holy moly, what an energetic person. She's very powerful, a fantastic information, and she really knows her stuff, and she's just about as high energy as you and I are.
I was listening to myself in a female version.
She packs a punch, boy, and she basically works like a holistic doctor with the animals.
Yes.
She treats the whole animal, and she goes to the cause, not just the symptom, which she says in her own words, when you hear this interview, she says that when the vets go to veterinary school, they are taught to treat disease.
Yes.
And then in the portion of the nutrition for the animals, they have big corporations come in and teach these veterinarian students. Somebody, let's say, for example, like Purina, will come in and talk about their products, and this is what you feed your animals, which is totally not healthy for
them. And I'm sure that when medical students get their 2 hours in 10 years of nutrition information, it's from some ambassador from Kraft or Nestle's Quick.
Of course.
Right, or some infant formula company.
And when I listened to her interview, I was like, deep down in my soul, I knew. But even with animals, they're doing it. Now, she says, when animals are getting man-made diseases such as heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and tooth decay, it's all diet-related. It's what the animal is eating. And she says most of the time when animals come in to her facility, it's usually their diet and lack of exercise. And cats and dogs are highly athletic, and they need rigorous exercise every single day for their heart and their lungs and their brain. So you have to be really careful, she says, which I already knew this before, but she said you have to be really careful when you're choosing a pet, let's say a dog, for example, because lots of dogs around. You have to choose a dog depending on your lifestyle. If you have a sedentary lifestyle, then why choose a Labrador Retriever when that lab needs to walk 5 miles a day, right?
Of course. I think the same thing applies to choosing a mate.
Exactly.
We're talking about compatibility.
Exactly.
And a lot of marriages don't work out because the people are not compatible.
Exactly. And something else that I found very interesting that she talked about was if you're vegetarian or vegan, then you pick an animal that is vegetarian. Don't pick cats and dogs. Pick an animal that is a vegetarian.
Well, again, it's a...
like a rabbit.
It's compatibility.
Like a rabbit. Because if you have a really hard time with eating meats, fish and chicken yourself, and you don't want to feed that to your animal, then you should not get a cat or a dog. It's not fair, and it's not humane.
You know what's weird is when you don't have a problem. So let's say you got a snake, you're a snake person, and you're a vegan. So you're feeding this snake. You got to do this. They buy these dead mice, and you feed it to them, right? That's what they eat. Now, you're feeding that snake a dead mouse, but you yourself, as an omnivore, as a carnivore and a herbivore combined, won't eat meat for whatever weird, strange reason, which is irrational in my opinion, but still something that people do.
Yeah, but all pets have biological demands, and they need that diet needs to be applicable to that. So that's really...
But it's true with the human.
Exactly, I know.
The same way.
When I'm listening to her, I'm going, well, that's just like people.
Everything that she said about the animals, we're an animal. We're not different. We're an animal. We're just a human animal. And we have the same exact needs, requirements. We've got to be vigorous. We've got to be active. We've got to run, swim, cycle. We've got to pump iron, right? The same things apply. And the reason that all these pets are sick and moldy and full of disease and degenerating is the same exact reason why humans are degenerating and falling apart and all freaking moldy. Yeah.
Said that animals should not get sick. They shouldn't be free of disease.
No, because they're not designed to be sick.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, a lot of the veterinarian societies do not like this because then they'd be out of business. And being a veterinarian is a business. But she said this in her own words. This is not my words. I'm just quoting her. So you got to listen to this interview. It's fantastic. So thank you so much, Dr. Karen Becker. We really, really appreciate your interview.
Yeah, listen to this interview if you want to know how to take care of a human.
Yeah.
Transfer the context from the animal to the human animal, right? The pet or the dog. I don't like pets. To me, it's a form of slavery, and there's all kinds of weird psychological elements in it. I don't want to get into detail on it. I tried to take a stab a little bit with her. I never got into the degree I'd like to. But I think the problem is that we capture these animals, we confine them against their will, and then we feed them incorrectly. We don't allow them to move. It's like putting a whale in an aquarium tank. Those things need to swim 100 to 200 miles a day. So the lack of activity is against the grain of nature. It's like going against physics, against laws of physics. And yet everyone wonders, why is my dog or cat sick? And then they just inject it or treat it or give it a pill or, and expect the thing to continue living. And then when it dies, people weep and they go into shock and they're stunned and they can't believe the thing died. It's like, what did you think? It was going to live forever? Do you think you're going to live forever? I think the whole thing is very bizarre.
I was just floored when I heard this. So anyway, do listen. Don't leave this one out. This is a main one that you need to listen to. Great.
Yeah, well, I asked her, do you think pets love their owners? And she couldn't answer that. Now, she's an expert. Her whole life.
Well, who? I mean, I don't think she could answer that.
But you see, now she's an expert. She spends her whole life, it's dedicated. So, like, people think their animals love them. And I asked her, do you think that animals love their owners? And she couldn't answer it. So if she can't answer it.
They appear to. She said they're a different species.
Yes, and of course they have different degrees of intelligence and emotions. But she could not substantiate this. That was my point that I wanted to make. People absolutely think that their dog or cat loves them, and I'm saying that they don't. They don't have the capacity to love. That's what I'm saying. That they mimic how we want them to be. We're forcing them to act a certain way, and that gives people a certain amount of false security. That's my point. If you truly let them be free, they would never stay in your freaking house. They would leave. And they would certainly eat rabbits and mice. It'd be a lot healthier for it, I think. So I thought that was a great interview because I'm pretty adamant about what we eat and how we live. And she was making it quite clear that the same rules apply to us as well as animals. And if you can't get it, like if you can't get the relationship there, you're never going to get it. You'll never understand it. Okay, our final topic, our hot topic, what's on your mind?
Well, the hot topic today has the flu shot. It's everywhere. Anytime we go into a grocery store, you see in the pharmacy, they've got these flu shots. It's all over the news. It's all over the Facebook. People are talking about the flu shot, get your flu shot. So I think this is a really interesting hot topic.
It's a dynamic topic. It's linked, obviously, the flu shot. We're talking about the concept of vaccination. And I was commenting on this on Facebook recently, and I think it's as controversial as abortion or euthanasia. When you start talking about vaccination, all kinds of people get out of joint and start screaming and yelling and stomping up and down, and it's really bizarre how people respond to the idea of being vaccinated.
Well, it's interesting because I just watched this interview with Dr. Mercola, and he said he was in the O'Hare airport and they were offering flu shots, and it says that there's so many companies out there and buildings that you're visiting offer this. Even in a public building, they would offer the flu shots, and since part of the reason is because the drug companies that make this have been able to convince and really manipulate the public health community to convince them that there's a public health crisis. Why? Because more than a million people get the flu every year. Now, we're talking just about in the United States, okay, just the United States.
Of which there are 300 million.
Okay.
So that means 299 million people don't.
Okay. But it sounds like a lot, doesn't it? A million.
Of course.
And of those, about a half a million at least are hospitalized. And from those half a million hospitalizations, about 35,000 people die every year from the flu, or so we're told.
Okay,
stop right there.
Now, let's say, for example, we know that people will go to the doctor for anything, no matter what it is that they think that they've got, because they live in fear of dying. So people go to the doctor when they shouldn't go to the doctor, and they just want some sympathy, some compassion. They can get online, they can take the straight logic, rational therapy, do it themselves, and just stay home, drink fluids, all that stuff, right? Two, you go to the hospital, the sickest, most contagious environment in the entire city. And so just going in there when you're sick, when you are not feeling well, in a vulnerable state, is going to make you at high risk to die. I would say that very few people, if any of them, actually die from what they think that they thought they had, or even the doctors, because no one really knows what they have and no one really tests for it.
Okay, I'm going to continue with what I was talking about earlier. Dr. McCullough says that if you examine very carefully some of the statistics, the 35,000 people mostly do not die from the flu, they die from pneumonia. And he says, in fact, the numbers show that less than 1,000 people a year die from the flu, and the rest are dying from pneumonia. Now, these people that are dying from the flu are usually the elderly who already have, as you mentioned, a lower immune system and liver damage. And what's very interesting is, what time of the year is this flu usually happening? Usually after seasonal holidays, such as Christmas time. And in January is a big flu shot season, because people are sleep deprived, their livers are damaged because they've been ingesting too much alcohol, too much sugar, too much stress because of the money they spent, maybe seeing family and relatives that they don't really like, just then traveling across the country. So it may be not even the flu that they're getting. It's just really detoxification, isn't it?
Well, it's more than that. It's how people live. You know, this is what this whole issue is about, vaccination. Do I believe in vaccination? That's the question. Do I have a flu shot? No. Do you have a flu shot?
No.
Okay, so the question is, why not? Now, do you live in fear of getting the flu on a day-by-day basis?
No.
No, neither do I. Do you even give it any thought whatsoever?
No.
No. Okay, when's the last time you had the flu?
I don't remember.
You can't even remember. It's been,
I felt a little under the weather, but usually I know why I feel under the weather.
We're not talking about hangovers. We're not talking about being stressed out. We're talking about you legitimately know that you probably have the flu.
Yeah. No.
Okay. And I say that legitimately know, because most people have no idea why they're sick. Absolutely.
It could be food poisoning.
And neither do the doctors.
Yeah.
You know, let's say that you have a bacterial infection. Do they test your blood or urine or saliva for the bacteria? No, they just routinely prescribe antibiotics. And let's say that you're infected with a virus. What a useless process that is. And that's half of all the people. So I think people that get the flu shot are terrified of death. They haven't conquered it philosophically. They can't deal with it. They can't face it. And they don't do the work that's necessary to be totally well. Strong, lean, fit, highly athletically conditioned, an immaculate diet, incredible diet, lots of vitamin shakes, clean food. They're not doing that. So these people are afraid of death. They're afraid of dying. Everyone's going to die, but they can't deal with it. So they'll line up and get the flu shot because they heard something on TV, and they live in fear, and that's what's motivating them. And I guarantee you took 99.999% of people that get the flu shot, and you ask them, what's in it? How is it made? What does the data say? What is the statistics on this? And they have not a clue.
They don't know.
So they're trusting in the wrong people, the people that are taking advantage of us, if we let them. So I say no and yay to living how we're supposed to live. And, you know, if you live the way you're supposed to live, the way that alternative functional integrative medicine promotes, you're living as a normal functional human being.
Making these flu shots is an industry, and it creates business. It's big, big business.
Huge business.
Yeah, and also, another interview that I saw said that if you have a flu shot 5 years in a row, your risk for Alzheimer's is higher. Isn't that amazing? And also what they're going to be using is dog kidneys in some of the vaccinations and some of the influenza shots. So you'll be getting some dog DNA in this as well. So also, this is just in short, make sure you have friendly bacteria in the gut and you really get a handle on that and have proper elimination. So acidophilus is a big one, vitamin D, and also if you can't get into the sunshine, then that's when a tanning booth, short little bits of a tanning booth, maybe 5 or 10 minutes once or twice a week. Not to get the tan. That's not what it's about. It's getting the light into the body.
Getting irradiated, yeah. Stimulating the production naturally, yeah. And then being very aggressive with vitamin D, taking much more than the conservative tables promote, like getting into the 4, 6, 10,000 international units of vitamin D as a safeguard. Pump up the volume, man. Take a lot of A. Take more zinc. Make sure lots of ascorbic acid is getting into your diet. Now, these people that line up for these flu shots are not doing that. So I find that the people that are into health, into training, into clean whole food nutrition, they're not getting vaccinated. The people that are eating the junk, the drive-throughs, sugar like it's flowing out of their ears, no concern whatsoever about eating fried food, junk food, garbage food. Yeah. They just shove it in. They're the ones that are getting the flu shots.
Well, you know, my mother had flu shots too, and I have friends that have had flu shots and acquaintances, and they all got the flu. They go, well, I just don't know why I got the flu, because I had a flu shot. I get one every year, and I still get the flu. I have no comment on that, because I know I'm just going to start an argument.
Yes.
So I just keep on going, and half the time it's probably not even the flu. It could be just irritable bowel. It could be food poisoning, and it's just a really bad liver and bad immune system.
You know how in the States, when they are being scrutinized under law in these Congress affairs with mafia agents, and they say, I'm going to take the fifth? You know, you've heard that, right?
Yep,
I'm going
yep.
to take the fifth, which means that they can't interrogate them or get them to make any confession or statement. So I'm going to take the Costanza principle on this. Do the opposite of what convention, of the collective, of the majority are doing. Do the opposite, and you will live longer and feel better, and you'll never worry, like you and I, about getting the flu or about dying, because we understand the facts, we're acting and living rationally, and we're doing what logic dictates and prevails. You look after yourself, you put the time, the energy, everything that it takes into staying well and being lean and functional, and then the likelihood of any infection. You know, washing hands, we didn't even talk about that. How important it is to wash your hands every day, multiple times.
Oh, my poor little dishpan hands. And get yourself a good lotion, too, to put on them, because you should be washing your hands. Like, in my business, I teach dancing, and so I'm always touching people all the time, and so I always wash my hands before and after each class. Then I mind the baby, and I'm always washing my hands. So it's very, very important. But, you know, I'm really thrilled that I got into this business, and I'm aware that there is another side. It's not just like the Wikipedia and the TV and the media. Okay, watch that. But you know what? Give yourself a break and look at the other side.
Absolutely.
What's going on. You know what I mean?
And that's harder because it's suppressed, it's blocked, it's ridiculed. They take shots at it. And I'm telling everyone listening to this right now that Wikipedia is not a reliable information on medicine. It is pro-conventional, pro-drug. It is non-prevention orientated. They take a shot and denigrate and try and denounce a lot of leading, fantastic preventive medicine physicians and the work that they've done. So if you want to know the speed of sound, check Wikipedia. But if you want to know the dirt about the conventional medical establishment, you're not going to find it on Wikipedia because it's hidden, and they edit and they censor all the right stuff or the wrong stuff depending upon your point of view.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Well, thanks. That was good about the flu shots. It kind of sheds a little bit more light.
Bottom line is you decide for yourself.
Exactly.
Parents don't have the right to infect their children because the children are innocent. They don't have the right to do a lot of things to children. So you want to infect yourself. You want to shove it into your body. Go ahead. It's your life. I'm into the freedom. You want to kill yourself slowly or fast? Go ahead. It's your life. It's nobody else's. You're nobody's property. But get off the pedestal when it comes to trying to control the world and tell everybody what to do, because that's what these people are trying to do. They're actually going to try and legislate it and make everyone get vaccinated. They're going to try and make it a law. And when that time comes, exit stage left off this planet. Okay, dear, that was a wonderful discussion. Thank you very much. Some great insight, information as per usual. What is your final word?
My final word is by Kinky Friedman. Money can buy you a fine dog, but only love can make him wag his tail.